Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When activist judges on Iowa Supreme Court imposed gay marriage, they were the only judges within 1,200 miles to reach such a radical conclusion. If they can redefine marriage, none of the freedoms we hold dear are safe from judicial activism. To hold activist judges accountable, flip your ballot over and vote no on retention of Supreme Court justices.
That ad ran in Iowa this election season and helped to unseat three state justices who voted to allow gay marriage in 2009. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. State judicial elections haven't usually attracted big ad money and don't usually make national headlines. But the ouster of these Iowa judges after Tuesday's vote is big news. Marsha Ternus, David Baker, and Michael Streit were ousted on Tuesday in retaliation for their votes on same-sex marriage. One side argues that activist judges who legislate from the bench should be ousted, while the other side argues that judicial independence is being undermined by an election process that has become too politicized to the detriment of us all. Joining me now is Richard Hassan, author of the Election Law blog and law professor at Loyola University. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
So tell me, why should we care about this election in Iowa? What are the stakes?
Well, you have to think about the fact that we have this somewhat of a mismatch between how we're choosing our judges and what we expect our judges to do. So when we hold elections, we're generally holding elections because we think that we want to hold our representatives accountable. And that's perfectly appropriate when we're talking about a legislator or an executive like a mayor or a governor. But when we choose judges, at least in part, what we want to do is assure that judges act independently. That is, one of the jobs of the judge is not to follow majority opinion when it conflicts with what the rule of law says. And so if we're going to have an election for judges, the question is how we're supposed to balance those two things, the concerns about accountability and concerns about judicial independence.
But isn't that, in a way, I mean, doesn't this sort of kind of put the national spotlight on what is really a kind of central contradiction for voters? Because, you know, when I talk to voters, I constantly hear them say, I want politicians to be independent. I don't want them to just go with the herd. I want them to do what they think is right. But then they don't actually really want that.
Well, I think when it comes to, you know, someone like a state legislator, I think that that people do want someone to be held accountable. And, you know, one way of reading the election results nationally is that people were not happy with what President Obama had put on his agenda and were reacting to that in terms of how they were voting. But when it comes to judges, I think it's a different order of magnitude. You know, so we want judges, you know, say in a First Amendment context, to protect the unpopular speaker. That's the kind of thing that that we don't expect elected politicians to do. We expect judges to do that. And so it's somewhat different, it's a different role for a judge than it is for a legislator. When we put judges up for election and we give voters the choice, it's hard to tell them to hold back and not treat judges the same way that they think about their votes for any other office.
Let's take some calls from listeners. I'm wondering if listeners, do you think as a voter you should get to have a say on what judges do, or do you think that it's the wrong way to go about it? You should just leave them alone. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. In Iowa, was this a truly unpopular decision, this gay marriage decision, or was it just that an outside group came in, the National Organization for Marriage, and spent so much money that they activated a certain base?
Well, I think that it, as it is across the country, I think the gay marriage question is one that polarizes people. Some people feel very strongly one way, some people feel very strongly the other. There was an interesting study that was done by the Des Moines Register yesterday. It was published, and it showed that although the judges running in this retention election did well in the cities, in the rural areas, the judges were ousted, or the vote to oust them was 8-1 in favor of not retaining them. And so it looks like this you know, issue of gay marriage, which has been a polarizing issue contrasting the liberal and conservative views on this question, got played out in this election.
Now, are there other issues across the country where judges have made decisions that, you know, seem to be somewhat ahead or on the fringes of public opinion, and they've been voted out in similar to this?
Well, it's very rare. Now, just stepping back for a second, there are different ways that judges stand for election. What happened in Iowa is that the judges were up for a retention election, which is a kind of election where you just vote yes or no on a judge. Should the judge be retained? And if the judge is voted no, which very rarely happens nationally, then a new judge is appointed in her place. But there are other places where we have competitive elections. And what we've seen in those elections is a great marshaling of interest group forces on both sides. So there was a very controversial ad run against a judge running on the Illinois Supreme Court. That what we saw there was that it was really a battle between business interests and labor interests. And this often gets played out with ads that focus on crime or social issues, but is really about control of kind of the business docket of these state Supreme Courts, where a lot of important business law is made.
Well, let's talk about that. And let me just mention parenthetically that between 2000 and the year 2000 and the year 2009, campaign spending for state Supreme Court seats jumped to $206.9 million compared with $83 million a decade earlier. Citizens United Supreme Court ruling made it possible for corporations and unions to spend unlimited funding in these elections. And let me play you a clip from an Alabama ad where the argument against the judge is a little different from the Iowa one.
Mike Bolin took money linked to BP oil, the same oil company that's destroying our Gulf Coast. Why does it matter? Because after Bolin took money linked to Exxon, he allowed the oil giant to cheat Alabama taxpayers. Liberal Bolin is just as soft on criminals. Last month, he reversed the murder conviction of a robber who killed a handicapped man. That's liberal Judge Bolin. He sides with oil companies, and he's soft on crime.
So it's kind of a hodgepodge on issues, whatever pushes your buttons. But if a judge is taking a lot of money from a corporation, should that not be fair ground for voter scrutiny?
Well, first of all, you know, the difference between independent spending and contributions, and in many places, corporations cannot make direct contributions in judicial elections. This is a matter of state and local law. But you know, don't take the ads that you hear at face value. You know, when an ad tells you that there's support from corporations, you really need to look behind it and see if that's really true. There are a number of ways that we try to insulate judges from the kind of the regular politicking that comes with running for election. For example, in a number of states, judges are not allowed to solicit campaign contributions directly or have limits on you know, being involved in the fundraising process. Some of those rules are being challenged in court as violating the First Amendment, with the idea that if you're going to put judges up for election, they've got to be you know, be able to fight back and do what other elected officials running for re-election do. But It's a kind of situation where, again, we're trying to balance these two interests. We want judges to exercise independent judgment, yet we want them to be accountable, and so we put them forward in elections. And it puts the judges, I think, in a difficult position sometimes.
All right, let's take a couple calls. Daniel from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Thank you very much. I wanted to point out to the to your guest that the governor of Illinois about 100 years ago, John Peter Altgeld, pardoned the Haymarket, the people convicted for the Haymarket bombing, because he did not feel that they had a fair trial. He knew when he did this that this would be the end of his political career, but he did it because it was a matter of conscience. He had the courage to do that. For my money, if a judge does not have the courage to do what they believe to be right, regardless of the consequence, they are better off the bench. There is nothing that says that a judge must be totally insulated forever, because that creates arrogance and insularity. I would like to hear your comments.
Let me ask you, Daniel, before we go to our guest, Richard Hassan. Let me ask you, because, you know, the question is that, you know, I think that sort of it's kind of like the same reason that you yell at the umpire in baseball. Chances are the umpire's not going to change the call, but, you know, that you'll sort of win the future ruling. So if a judge leaves their seat, do you not think that that creates more fertile ground for the next judge to be more unwilling to make controversial rulings?
It depends on whether the person has the actual substance to be a judge. If you say, I am going to bend my ruling because I am afraid of the electorate. Now, my understanding is that in Iowa, people are appointed for a lengthy period, something like 8 years, and then they have to stand for a renewal election, which gives the, in 8 years, any judge is going to make some unpopular decision. There's also time for passions to cool. Now, I don't want to get into the specifics of same-sex marriage, but it is clear to most people who are not living in a bubble that the nation as a whole, the overwhelming populace of the nation, while they are willing to grant rights to same-sex couples, that the word marriage is a hot button issue.
All right, Daniel, let's get a response because we do have a lot of people calling in. Let me just say that my name is Andrea Bernstein. I'm in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Richard Hassan. He's the author of the Election Law Blog and a law professor at Loyola University. Rick Hassan, can we get a response to Daniel was saying?
Yeah, well, I would like to quote you what Otto Kaus, who was a well-respected justice of the California Supreme Court, said when he talked about running for elections. He said, voters are like a crocodile in a bathtub. The crocodile's in with you, and you're trying to ignore the crocodile, but very hard to ignore. And the question is whether the ouster of the judges in Iowa is going to chill the ability of judges throughout the country who stand for election to act independently. And it's something that's very hard to measure. And Justice Kaus said, you know, it's a subconscious thing, and we just don't know how much it affects. And I'm not talking simply about the gay marriage issue, but about any politically unpopular choice that a judge may make. If we if we're worried about that, we might want to think about changing the way that we choose our judges.
Let's take
Go ahead.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Kathy from Manhattan. Hi, Kathy. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thank you very much. I grew up in Iowa, and we had a very strong tradition of personal rights. I'm not saying that they weren't challenged, but the courts supported the Constitution, and that's what happened in this case. I don't think you can leave the issue of rights of individuals to public opinion. Otherwise, the blacks might never have gotten the right to vote. It has to be above the popular opinion, and that's why we have the court. And I understand that there was a lot of carpetbagging, that people came in from other states to push this, and I'm just heartsick about it.
Kathy, one of the things I'm wondering is because I played that piece of tape from the, you know, BP ad or the ad about the judge who was accused of taking money from BP. And I'm wondering, you know, if there was a judge who, you know, and let's sort of get hypothetical here and sort of, you know, forget about, suspend our interest in the facts in this case. If there was a judge who was taking money from an oil company and then making rulings favorable to that company, would that disturb you?
Well, yes, and there must be a process for taking that guy out. If he's taking money, that's bribery. That's a whole different issue, it seems to me.
Simply a judge that you disagree with? If there was a judge that consistently ruled in a way that you thought was out of the mainstream on, you know, an issue that you might care about, you don't think there should be any voter accountability ever?
I'm not sure how that can be done, but popular opinion is not the way to decide the rights of individuals.
Let's ask this question to our guest, Rick Hassan, author of the Election Law Blog and Loyola University professor. Is there any way to deal with a judge that you just feel consistently rules in a way that is out of the mainstream and detrimental to society?
Well, you know, there are different places. If we're going to hold elections, there are different places to draw the line. So certainly the easy case is the one you described, where the judge is engaged in some kind of illegality or impropriety. That's, of course, a good reason to remove any public official from office. But beyond that, the question is what should be something that is appropriate to include. And I think if a judge has a record of being consistently intellectually dishonest out of the views of the what is respectable among the judiciary, then that is potentially a basis to vote the judge out. On the gay marriage issue, there are respectable positions and there are respected judges on both sides of that issue, and it seems to me that voting either way would not be an appropriate basis to for choosing to vote a judge out of office.
So let's tease out. Let me tease out what you mean by sort of, intellectually dishonest. And how do you decide that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that happens when judges, we make judges not only decide cases, but write opinions. And those opinions are subject to criticism. And every once in a while, there are opinions that come out that, there's a broad consensus that the judge was not appropriately applying precedent, was not appropriately applying the rules as they are set out. In those rare kinds of circumstances, and when that's pointed out by, the lawyers and legal scholars and other judges who follow these things, then that is potentially a basis to remove a judge. That's not the situation in Iowa at all. You had here a controversial interpretation of the Iowa Constitution, but one that was within the mainstream of what judges are doing around the country.
Do you think that the voters in Iowa misunderstood the role of the courts?
I don't think it's a question of misunderstanding. I think that voters in Iowa, as in other parts of the country, very much understand what they're doing. The difference between what those majority of voters did and what I'm saying is I would apply a different standard to judicial elections. I would restrain myself from voting against a judge, even if I disagreed strongly with her opinion, unless I thought that there was this kind of impropriety or string of intellectually dishonest cases.
How do you? I mean, you're a law professor, so that may be relatively easy for you to evaluate. But how does somebody who is not an expert decide whether they should vote against a judge because he or she has been intellectually dishonest, or whether they just disagree?
Right. So, yes. The question is, who you rely upon? Do you rely upon maybe the editorial board of the newspaper, local newspaper that spends time working on this, or the Bar Association? I mean, there are ways to try and get this information out. I should point out that in Nevada, there was a measure on the ballot that was pushed heavily by former U.S. Supreme Court Justice O'Connor to try and move away from competitive elections for judges, and that was soundly defeated. And the message from that, I think, is that voters like to have this ability to have accountability for their judges. So as much as there's been some criticism of what happened in Iowa, I think the idea of electing judges, as the idea of electing anyone in this country, is very popular. People like to have their franchise, and they like to be able to exercise it.
Any other results from around the country on Tuesday that are going to impact the courts?
Well, beyond the Iowa race and the Nevada ballot measure, one of the interesting things was the Illinois race, which we talked about, where there were a very tough and I would say unfair ads run against Justice Kilbride, who was a justice on the Illinois Supreme Court. And despite this massive spending against him and these very rough ads, he was retained in office. So it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of judicial independence that comes out of this last election.
Given the results in Nevada, what do you think is a better way?
Well, I've always liked the federal model. The federal model is that you are nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate for life. As an alternative to that, we could have a single 18-year term, which some people have suggested, for a judge, or mandatory retirement at age 70 to have a little more turnover. But that's the model I've always liked. But if we're going to have elections, then I think it's a tough call as to whether or not it's better to have partisan or nonpartisan elections. If we're going to have elections with what usually is the least controversial is the retention election. It's just in the rare circumstances like Iowa where it becomes front page national news.
By the way, New York, we obviously do have partisan elections, and that is much criticized, in its own way, for judges. The accusation is being sort of just tools of the party bosses and elected only by the few. But we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Richard Hassan, author of the Election Law Blog and law professor at Loyola University. Thanks to everyone who called. When we come back, we're going to talk about the future of transportation in a Republican Congress right after this.